All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true.
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Court-appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Well, Tommy, before we get started today, we have some cleaning up to do from the last episode.
Did I make that big of a mess of it?
No, I think it may have been me that stuck my foot in it this time.
What'd you do?
Well, we ended up almost in a lawsuit over the last episode.
A lawsuit?
Yep.
Well, at least we got a lawyer.
That's true. But, you know, what they say about a lawyer who represents himself.
It's a folly for a fool or something like that.
Folly for a fool? A fool for a client and an ass for a lawyer or something like that?
Something like that.
Yeah, I don't know.
That would be quite ascertaining.
Abraham Lincoln said it. He's quite the quotesmith. But no, evidently back on our Facebook page back in August, and August 15th, as the evidence has shown, Jake Dickerson pointed out that we should do a episode on the Electoral College.
Good old Jake.
Yep, and we didn't give him his credit, and he threatened to sue us for half of our earnings from that episode.
But we don't make anything.
That's true. We don't.
We just spend money on beer.
That's right, and bandwidth. So therefore.
Therefore, he owes us for half of that.
That's right. That was the ruling.
Well, good. We need some more people to try to sue us so that we can make some more money off of our nonprofit podcast.
Yep. So sue us for half of the episode, and you end up owing us money.
We're just like a charitable organization.
We're judgment proof.
Yeah, we just make donations of knowledge and laughter throughout the world. We're spreaders. We're good deed doers.
We give 50% dad jokes, 50% fart jokes.
I don't think we've had that many fart jokes.
Well, maybe we need to up the ante. It's
50% dad jokes and 50% fine legal knowledge.
Yeah, there you go. That's a nice blend.
That's what I like to think.
After giving Jake his shout out for the suggestion on that.
Way to go, Jake. Shout out, dude.
There's a couple other people I think we wanted to give some shout outs to for some different things that happened this week.
Another one we overlooked.
Who was that? That was Angela Peck.
She's the one that coined the phrase court-appointed correction officers.
Yeah, that was a very clever clever terminology and phrase there. I like that one.
We loved it. As soon as we saw it, we adopted it and took it as our own and failed to give her credit. Yes. And we shortened it to Keiko.
Yeah, we're good at taking credit for other people's knowledge.
It's not to be confused with Kinko's. It's totally different.
That's right. Kinko's. They're the copy people, right?
Either that or they have something to do with sex practices. I don't know.
That's a totally different store.
Oh, okay.
And we also want to thank Angela Whaley. She is the one who posted on the Facebook page, the Court Appointed Facebook page, the LBJ Bunghole YouTube phone call that I mentioned.
Oh, that is a classic. If you haven't heard it, it's a must see here.
So you hadn't heard it before and you listened to it, right?
Oh, no, I'd never heard it before.
Did you like it?
I guess, you know, the presidents are just human beings too, as we have seen in this election. But to hear the president on there ordering his pants and then telling him the reasons why he needs more room in the crotch and stuff like that is beyond me. The thing that really got me the most, and it's not like I'm the most couth person in the world,
yes,
but he lets out this just disgusting belch right in the middle of that conversation. He doesn't say, excuse me, or sorry about that, or nothing. He just keeps on going like, I'm the president. You have to be subjected to my belches. There's nothing you can do about it.
My favorite line from that is when he says, it's like sitting on razor wire. If you haven't seen, you should watch it.
These pants are great. They're the best pants I ever had, but I need the pockets bigger. I need the crotch let out. I need another half inch in the waist. And by the time he rebuilt the damn things, why did he even call him? He should have gone out and got new pants altogether.
It's like Homer Simpson when he designs his own car in The Simpsons, and it's this horrible, horrible car with like 20 cup holders. And
well, then the other thing I didn't understand, yeah, that's good for pants, but then he wants to have a shirt and a jacket made out of the same material.
Yeah, it's a little strange.
What is that? Who wears that? I mean, I know that was, well, that was pre-leisure suit day. I don't even think people were wearing leisure suits then.
He was ahead of his time. He was a very progressive guy.
Yeah, but you don't have the same material. Policies. Your pants and your jacket and your shirt are not made out of the same material. I mean, he turned himself into a suitcase if you'd have done that. He's like luggage at that point.
Oh, yeah. If you haven't heard that video or that phone call, LBJ orders pants. Check it out. Well, the Cubs have won the World Series.
Yay! People are rolling over in the graves. Harry Carey's going, oh, we finally won it.
Yeah, so it was a big deal.
Holy cow.
108 years or something like that, right?
It's been a long time. I don't know. There's one broad that's been waiting for it, and she's about 108 years old, so I guess it's about right.
One broad?
Yeah, one broad. They kept showing her on TV. They had a 104-year-old broad with the Indians, and they had a 108-year-old one for the Cubs, so the 108-year-old won. That's good because she's probably got less time.
That's true. Yeah.
Sorry, ma'am.
I don't know. I don't know.
Sorry, ma'am's family.
I don't know if it's proper respect to call a 108-year-old lady abroad. I think that's...
I think she would be flattered.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe so. I don't know. Well, I mean...
It's a term of endearment.
Well, she's 108 years old. She probably has been called a lot worse pejorative terms over the years. Like skirt.
A skirt and a dame.
Yeah, dame. It's...
Hey, Dave, would you bring me another beer in here? That's be Boston.
Yeah.
Boston had nothing to do with the World Series.
No, thank goodness.
Pack your car!
After watching the baseball, it made me think of an interesting topic regarding baseball and the antitrust exemption that they have for sports.
You mean you can't trust any of them?
Well, that's definitely true. You definitely can't trust any baseball players, any Major League Baseball players.
They all take steroids.
That's not true.
They used to.
Well, there was a time when I think most of them were on the juice.
Yeah, when a guy comes in and he's 176 pounds and 5 years later he's 250 and he increased his hat size by three sizes, there's something wrong going on there.
Yeah, Mark McGwire, if you look at him from his, I have his rookie baseball card, he's just kind of a normal sized guy. And then by the time he was hitting all those home runs, he was huge.
He was huge, not to quote anybody.
Huge.
Huge. He was the best. He was better than anybody. He'll hit the most home runs.
So baseball is actually different from any of the other pro sports.
Baseball being very good to me.
I love this country very, very much. Was that Sammy Sosa that said that? Or?
Yeah, it was Sammy Sosa, but it was Saturday Night Live that they kept doing the sketch of it. Was it Eddie Murphy that was doing it?
I don't remember. I don't think I ever saw that sketch.
Somebody from Keiko will fix that for me.
They probably will.
Confirm or deny. I have plausible deniability.
Well, I was reading a journal about the antitrust exemption. It was kind of one of the interesting quotes was, it was kind of funny, since there are these antitrust laws for professional sports, it said that professional sports are built around competition, but the industry would not exist without collusion. So basically, antitrust laws exist to prevent monopolies from forming, because whenever you have a monopoly,
you can't pass go and collect 200.
That's right. If you land a monopoly, you're in trouble. Well, that's basically, I mean, what a monopoly is. If you think about the board game, you're trying to allocate three different properties all in a row, so you monopolize that part of the board. Mm-hmm. And once you monopolize that part of the board, then you can raise the rent on it exorbitantly and then bankrupt your opponents. So that's kind of, in theory, if you think about it, what monopoly and what antitrust is all about. Because to prevent antitrust laws are basically to avoid monopolies. So you don't have, like, for example, all the cable companies owned by one parent company, and they can raise the prices on cable through the roof, and there's no competition. There's nothing that can be done for it. So that's what antitrust is set up to do, is to prevent things like that from happening.
I see. So why is this different for baseball than any other merger that might take place or something like that along business lines?
Well, all sports are actually... All professional most of the professional sports in the United States and Europe, they are exempt from antitrust laws. The interesting thing about baseball, though, is it's the only one that has it kind of on the books. It's the only one that has some case law out there that gives it this exemption. The other ones are just kind of on a piece-by-piece basis.
So what does it allow them to do that other people can't do for those of us who are slightly on the ignorant side?
Well, I mean, they can basically collude. They can restrict competition, essentially, for their various sports disciplines or whatever.
So they can decide like ticket prices and set that together as a group, like each team or whatever. They can get together and decide what ticket prices will be and
exactly
and how much they collude when they make their television deals, maybe, or something like right. that.
Yep, and profit sharing. Things
okay,
like
that's
that.
What I was. I didn't understand. Where is it that they get to do this that other people can't do it?
So the basic theory is that sports clubs, they're separate, economically independent businesses, but they cooperate on a business level to maintain the competitive balance among the sports clubs. So basically, you would think this economic cooperation would violate antitrust laws, but it doesn't because it actually promotes a more competitive playing field for all the teams in these different leagues, if you think about it, by setting the different...
They're able to act for the good of all teams instead of each team doing their own thing, which may be at a detriment to another team.
Right, because otherwise you might have one team that just gets better and better and better and better. But
the success of the league depends on all the teams succeeding, not just individual members.
Exactly. So they're kind of an anomaly.
They have revenue sharing, don't they?
They do, yeah.
I mean, ones in larger markets have to pay money to those in the smaller markets and stuff to keep it equal, right?
They do, and that's a constant source of grumbling among these different teams. So,
well, they can grumble all they want. They're still making lots of money.
That's true. And those things are different on a league-by-league basis. The one thing that baseball has that is different than the other ones is that a lot of teams, like, you know, NFL teams can switch cities and things like that. They can relocate. Mm-hmm. Well, baseball doesn't allow that.
Period? You can't relocate your team if you're not getting a good turnout or something?
Well, you can't. The owners can't do it. There's more restrictions on that in order to do it. You have to have, I guess, probably the ability from the league, consent from the league to do it. Whereas with football and other things like that, they don't necessarily need the league's consent.
Hmm.
They're allowed to do that. So it's different. It's on a sport by sport basis. But that's one of the reasons why baseball teams, you don't see them kind of jumping around from city to city as much as you do with the football teams. I mean, Al Davis took the Raiders to a different team or different city every year, I think.
Well, that's a little bit of an exaggeration.
Not quite.
If it wasn't for Al Davis, we wouldn't have the current NFL.
That's true.
He was the one that took control of the AFL and took such an adversarial position and started raiding the top players from the NFL that the NFL decided we better merge, and everybody decided that the NFL got a better deal than the AFL out of that. But who was the main player? Do you know who the main player was that actually caused that merger to take place? When the AFL acquired him, that was the trigger that made the NFL decide they needed to do something?
That was Broadway Joe, wasn't it?
Broadway Joe Namath. They recruited him and got him to come to the AFL,
paid him
the largest contract at the time that any NFL player had ever received.
Because he went to the Jets, right?
Mm-hmm. It was the Titans at the time.
Titans, okay.
But they, you know what that size of that contract was?
No, I don't.
$472,000. Can you believe that compared to today?
Wow, that's crazy.
I mean, people making several million dollars, and that was the top contract of the day, $472,000.
They probably make that in a game now.
And once they got Broadway Joe in the AFL, the NFL said, we got to do something.
Well, that's pretty interesting that that's one player kind of made that happen.
Yeah. Well, their thought was the AFL would only be able to acquire second tier players, ones that didn't get drafted, maybe people that washed out in the NFL and stuff like that. But when they started going head to head with them, and they had enough millionaire owners that they were able to pay top dollar and bring in some of the best ones. So it was causing a real problem. They were having their draft on the same day. So you go in there and you draft somebody with your first round draft pick. Well, they get drafted over in the other league. You didn't know if you were going to get them or not. So you basically would be forfeiting your draft pick. So think how these teams are built these days and how important the draft picks are. you would draft somebody number one, you didn't know if they were going to play for you or play for the other league. So that just caused chaos. There were players that dropped way down in one league because the league felt, well, they're probably going to sign with the other league, so we won't try to draft them.
That's a whole different layer of trying to figure out how you're going to draft somebody.
Yeah. I mean, that would absolutely screw teams up because, I mean, your whole draft class could sign with the other league, and you got nothing.
Then what do you do?
Yeah. So, I mean, it was causing a financial just disaster for the NFL teams, and they had to do something. So that's when they suggested the merger.
And that was, I guess you saw that happen kind of in real time, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were two completely separate leagues, and then they joined them together. And, of course, the AFL was figured to be inferior. Then they would play the championship. And then once what they did is they did it over a four-year period. The first 4 years, they played a championship, and then they played completely separate. NFL played their schedule. The AFL played their schedule, and they each presented a champion to play in the final championship game. Mm-hmm. But somewhere along the line, they decided, we need a name to give this thing. So then somebody came up with the Super Bowl. But you know where that name came from? A popular toy at the time was a Super Ball. It was a very bouncy ball that they sold to kids that would bounce it and would bounce as high as a house. And one of the people in the NFL liked that name and said, let's call ours the Super Bowl. And that's where it came from, was the toy, the Super Bowl.
I mean, there were bowl games before that. They're like the Rose Bowl and things like that.
Well, that was college.
I know, but there were the term bowl to be used for.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just Super Bowl was where they coined the phrase from.
Our family has, also for our listeners out there, our family has an annual Thanksgiving football game called the Turkey Bowl.
Because we're all a bunch of turkeys.
It's been going on for how many years now?
As long as I've been with the family, and that's 38 years, and I know it was going on before I got there.
I mean, it's as old as I am, and I'm 40, so it's a long-standing tradition.
Yeah, there's been a lot of players come and go.
That's right. A lot of good memories.
And we still try to do it. Some of us are hobbling around out there still, watching you young bucks run up and down the field.
Well, that's what you told me last year, but then you end up plowing me over a couple times.
I couldn't stop. It wasn't intentional. It was like one of those old Jerry Clower stories where the city hall was on fire, and they were like, what are we going to do? And here came the Ledbetter family over the hill and right down and took their vehicle right through the front door and put out the fire. And they said, what have you got to say for yourselves? And the guy said, I got to get my brakes fixed.
That's one of the strangest stories I've ever heard you tell.
You ever listen to Jerry Clower?
No.
You never heard him?
No.
He's hilarious. He's a good old-time storyteller.
I've never heard
dig up some old Jerry Clower. He's probably on YouTube or something like that.
I'm sure everything's on the internet. Well, to get back to baseball and the history of their antitrust laws.
Oh, yeah, that's what we were talking about.
Well, back in 1903, the American League and the National League, they joined forces. So kind of a similar thing, I think, probably to the AFL and the – what was AFL and the – what was the –
In the NFL.
Oh, okay, yeah. That's right. They just adopted the NFL's name.
Right.
So kind of probably a similar thing to the AFL and the NFL, where basically American League and National League joined forces. And they were really successful. And, of course, whenever you're really successful, you spark imitation. And these other baseball leagues popped up. So one of the other main leagues that popped up was this league called the Federal League. It started out as a minor league, but in 1914, it had kind of grown and grown and grown, and many considered it kind of to be on par with the American League and the National League. But the Major League, and I'm using that term to talk about the American League and the National League, they didn't like the Federal League because they were taking their better players. And Major League Baseball, they were attempting to essentially keep players from going over to the Federal League. Just basically saying like they owned those players and they couldn't go over there, restricting them. So the Federal League sued Major League Baseball under federal antitrust law for interfering with their attempts to hire the players when they were in between contracts with the Major League Baseball. And they sued them under those antitrust laws, the Sherman Act. So that's kind of the setting the stage for what happened here. Now, one of the interesting things is that this case went before a judge, and that judge's name was Kennesaw Mountain Landis.
Kennesaw Mountain Landis?
Do you know who he was?
Sound like a football player.
He's with his name like a mountain. You know, he's a big guy.
Or a WWE wrestler.
That's right. Well, Kennesaw
Mountain.
Evidently, he was a huge Cubs fan, number one. So I'm sure he's pretty happy the Cubs won the World Series.
I'd say he's dead now.
Probably. And
because what year was this?
That was in 1915.
1915. Pretty good bet he's dead now.
But you know what? He got to see him win back in 1908 or whenever.
Well, that's probably true. He probably did.
Yeah. Maybe that's why he was one of those bandwagoners. He wasn't a fan of him before 1908.
We're going to do it again here next year. Isn't that what they always say? Next year.
Next year. Just wait about another.
He ran out of years.
Wait another 108 years there, Kennesaw.
Only one that hung around was a 108-year-old broad.
That's right.
That's all she had to live for. There's nothing to keep her alive now.
Oh, that's such a sad thing.
We're going to read in the paper in a week. She's dead. It's going to be my fault.
She died a happy woman.
Yeah, the Cubs won. She'd give up. That was all that was keeping her alive. Some people go on life support. She was on Cubs support.
I hope that's not the case. Well, he became the first commissioner of Major League Baseball, Commissioner Landis.
Well, that sounds normal. If you add the Kennesaw Mountain in front of it now.
Now, I think he was the one.
There's got to be stories about a guy like that. I mean, he had to go in and drink like 10 beers at a time and, you know, tear tree trunks out of the ground and stuff like that. You don't get a name like that and not be some type of big, like Paul Bunyan type dude.
That's right. Wasn't he one of the judges that, or the commissioner, the one about the Black Sox?
That was 1919, I think, if I remember right.
That's right. He's the one, he expelled 8 members, the Chicago White Sox.
Shoeless Joe Jackson?
That's right. Oh, and you know what? They were White Sox, Chicago White Sox, and he was supposedly a Cubs fan.
Yeah.
I wonder if that played into his decision to...
Probably did.
I would bet so. I bet that's part of the history, the reason why White Sox and White Sox and Cubs don't like each other.
And you know where Shoeless Joe Jackson turned up later?
Where's that?
In a field of dreams.
I should have seen that one coming.
And he found his shoes because he wasn't barefoot.
No, he wasn't.
So I don't know. I think that was Ray Liotta, wasn't it? No, or was Ray Liotta the dad?
I think he was the dad.
That could be.
But I guess his stats, Shoeless Joe Jackson's stats were pretty good for that series, though, was the thing.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's what they tried to say is that you look at his stats and he didn't throw anything.
Well, anyway, he was the judge that this whole antitrust thing went before, and he ended up being.
And he said, "I'll know it when I see it." He's the one that coined that phrase.
He didn't. I don't. He may have said that. I don't know. But what he did was he used a classic judge procedure. And he said, "Well, you know what? I'm going to take this matter under advisement." And he didn't rule on it. He just let it sit.
The matter of what?
When the Federal League sued the Major League Baseball for antitrust.
Oh, so I see. So I'll take it under advisement and just let it go away.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he didn't want, he was protecting the Cubs somehow by doing that?
Yep. Because that was the theory was that he didn't want to hurt his baseball team, the Cubs, because that would actually make his team weaker.
So then by doing that, he became a hero to them. So that's why they made him the commissioner later?
I mean, I don't know.
That sounds like the wrong kind of collusion.
I don't know that for a fact, but it does seem a little fishy.
If there's any of you out there that were around in 1915, how do you fill us in on those details?
Well, ask that 108-year-old broad. See what she thinks.
Yeah, we'll ask her. You know what her response will be? Go Cubs! But well, what do you want for dinner? Go Cubs! That's all she...
I want a hot dog. Some Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever come back.
Well, you won't. I tell you what, I didn't know until I saw the commercial. I don't go to baseball games. I know there's a lot of people that love baseball. I'm not one of them. I saw in a commercial, you can sit there in your chair and order a hot dog from your chair, and they'll bring you a hot dog.
Really? That's
nice.
In the new
stadiums and everything. You can sit there and punch it in and order hot dogs and drinks, and they bring them to you. There's an app for that.
That's pretty cool.
I know.
Now, I mean, I got to tell you, I was a big baseball fan growing up, just for the simple fact I played baseball and I collected baseball cards and watched it on TV. I would always watch either the Yankees or the Cubs on TV because they were on TV almost every night because of the New York station, the WGN station. They were the New York station, the Chicago station, WGN were always on TV, so you always see all their games. But then at some point, I kind of stopped being a baseball fan. When the strike happened, I just kind of stopped watching and never went back to it.
I just find it boring. They just stand around most of the time, and even when they do hit the ball, so what? I mean, I played it as a kid, but that's just because everybody else in the neighborhood did. I didn't really ever enjoy it.
Well, it's kind of, to hear you say that, kind of it puzzles me because you actually helped me become a better baseball player when I was a kid.
Well, I knew how to play it, and I knew all the fundamentals. It just wasn't fun.
You helped me become a good infielder. You taught me how to field a ground ball, Tommy.
Well, I knew how to do it. I could do all those things. It just wasn't fun, you know? I just didn't enjoy the whole process.
Well, I didn't really get back into it until I lived in Chicago, kind of close to Wrigley Field, and that's when I think I started getting back into it a bit more, and my interest in baseball and Cubs kind of was sparked a little bit more, I guess.
The only interest I had, I guess, because growing up in Huntington, the closest team to us is Cincinnati Reds.
Right.
Which is the oldest baseball team in baseball.
The Red Leggings?
Yes, the Cincinnati Red Legs. But I was a kid during the Big Red Machine era. Johnny Bench, Pete Rose, Bobby Tolan, Joe Morgan, Tony Perez, Dave Concepcion. Those guys were my heroes. I mean, they won World Series, and they were just, you know, I knew every one of the guys on the team. And as a little kid, you know, you go out and you play wiffle ball in the neighborhood. I'm Dave Concepcion. I'm Pete Rose. I'm Bobby Tolan. You know, everybody was calling out. That was the team everybody around rooted for, the Reds, because they were the closest team to us.
They were really good, too.
Yeah, that was their heyday. And I can tell you this. I was living in Cincinnati. And I was, well, this won't sound good. I was working on the hump at Queens Gate. That's a railroad term. I used to work for the railroad. I was working on the hump at Queens Gate, and I heard the cheer go up from Riverfront Stadium the night that Pete Rose hit the broke Ty Cobb's record.
That's cool.
So that we were standing out there. We knew that game was going on, and I'd been listening to it, but I had to go down and help out with some stuff going on the hump. And as I stood out there, we heard a cheer come up because we were within several blocks of Riverfront Stadium. And the cheer went up when he got that hit and broke Ty Cobb's record. So,
well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I still remember that historical moment to my day. And I hope that someday somebody lets him in the Hall of Fame, because I really believe he deserves it. I don't care what he did.
I agree. I've got a special place for Pete Rose.
What he did as a manager was separate from what he accomplished as a player. And he did it before there were steroids and things like that involved. What he did was pure. He was Mr. Baseball.
Yeah. One of the most iconic pictures in baseball is him going head first, sliding in. I mean, he was Charlie Hustle.
He took out that one catcher in that All-Star game, and that catcher never played again.
I shouldn't laugh.
I know. But
that just shows his intensity.
Was it Carlton Fisk?
No. Carlton Fisk kept playing.
Who was it? There's somebody that he took out. That was the all-star catcher for the other team, and he took him out, and he never played again after that.
Carlton Fisk played into the 80s. I remember him.
I might have the wrong guy. I don't remember who it was.
Well, to get back to the actual antitrust thing. So basically,
actual podcast.
Yeah, we started talking about baseball. So
what little knowledge I have, I was bespewing on you.
So eventually, after Judge Kennesaw Mountain Landis kind of put the case on the back burner and stalled it out, the Federal League ended up being absorbed into the American League and National League, all the players. And I think basically what happened is...
Either teams or just the players?
Just the players.
Oh, okay.
I think what happened is basically they bought out all the owners. So
buy out the competition.
Yeah.
That's what you do in mergers nowadays.
It's the American way.
Yeah.
But there was one team that was not happy about this whole situation, and that was the team from Baltimore, the Baltimore Terrapins of the Federal League.
The Baltimore Terrapins? What a terrible mascot.
Well, that's actually that's the mascot of the University of Maryland, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a university, but, I mean, what do you think about how fast they run around the bases? I mean, there's no stolen bases for a terrapin.
That's true.
I don't know. I mean, you know, when it's your whole university, that's one thing. But this is specific to just one sport.
they're not known for their base running prowess.
No, uh-uh.
They can really hunker down on a lead, I guess. Man, I don't know. Trying to think of any kind of good qualities turtles might have for baseball.
Lou Brock.
Lou Brock?
That's who is their base-stealing prowess. He was, in my era, he was the top base stealer in the league.
Oh.
I got a pair of tennis shoes that were Lou Brock tennis shoes, and I'm sure they made me run faster.
My favorite baseball player of all time, and also arguably the best base stealer of all time, and my favorite was Ricky Henderson. He broke Lou Brock's records. I love me some Ricky Henderson.
Well, that was before they had all the special equipment. Lou Brock probably could have done it barefoot.
Ricky Henderson played. His rookie year was 82, I think, or something like that.
That was a long time ago.
I have his rookie card.
Hell, I'd been married 4 years by then. That was not a long time ago.
Well, Ricky Henderson, I liked him too because he was always the leadoff hitter, and he'd always hit a lot of home runs. Too. He had some power.
You don't get that out of many leadoff hitters.
No. He's a good guy.
Yeah, I know the game. I just don't like it.
I was waiting for a joke. I was waiting for a dad joke to follow that just because when you look to him, you don't get that out of many leadoff hitters.
They're not known for their power. They're known for their speed and getting on base. That's what your leadoff hitter is supposed to do.
Yeah. When they go yard, though, it's something special. So the Baltimore Terrapins were pretty upset about this whole ordeal. And actually, one of the team's owners, Comiskey for the White Sox, he said some disparaging things about the city of Baltimore in particular. Just they were very kind of, Baltimore was just not happy with the way this whole thing shook out. So Baltimore sued Major League Baseball, and they sued them under this antitrust act, the same one that the Federal League had done. And the court actually found in their favor and awarded them $240,000 in damages.
Hmm.
So back then, I mean, you got to think, $240,000.
That's big money.
That was huge money. Of course, Major League Baseball appealed it, and it matriculated its way to the appeals process, and then...
Matriculated. That's a good word. I like that. That's one of them lawyer words.
It is. It is a good word. And it was basically held that the antitrust did not apply to baseball because it was not the kind of commerce that federal law was intended to regulate. So essentially, it wasn't the... Didn't the antitrust law didn't apply to it.
So they overturned the ruling?
They overturned,
didn't have to pay them the money.
They overturned the ruling, didn't have to pay them the money. And the Baltimore Terrapins are no more.
Well, didn't they become the Baltimore Orioles, or did that wipe out the Terrapins and then the Orioles came along later?
I don't know. I assume that the Baltimore Terrapins were just gone, and then eventually a franchise was granted to Baltimore, and that's where we have the Orioles.
Hmm. They had some of my favorite players.
Orioles?
Yeah. I went to an Orioles game once as a kid.
Did you?
Yeah. Boog Powell. Heard of Boog Powell, the big booger?
No. The big booger?
Yeah.
That's a great nickname. If your name is Boog Powell, though, I mean, you got to kind of count on having a good nickname.
Brooks Robinson?
Yeah. I remember Brooks Robinson.
Brooks Robinson. I used to have a Brooks Robinson glove when I played Little League.
He was third baseman, wasn't he?
Third baseman.
Yeah.
Third baseman extraordinaire, I'd say.
Yep. That's a position, third base, I did not like.
That's the hot corner.
Yeah, I'm taking a few baseballs off the old noggin while sitting on the hot corner.
When I was a young kid, like 6 years old or whatever, the only vacant lot in our neighborhood was right past our house. I mean, it was next door to our house. We didn't own it, but I guess since it was in proximity to our house, when the older kids would come down there to play, I'd come out there with my glove to play, and they were like, oh, man, Smurl's here. Well, you had him. I had him last time. You got to take him this time. So they felt like they had to let me play because the lot was next to our house. And I guess they felt like my parents would come out and say something to him, make them let me play. So they always put me on third base because they said nobody ever hits the ball there. So I don't know, but that might have been true when we were kids playing in the sandlot field.
You play a bunch of left-handers?
No, I guess nobody got around the ball fast. They got around slow.
Oh, man. I have some nightmares thinking about playing third base and balls steaming at my face.
But I was one of the younger kids, so I'm like 6, and most of the other kids are like 10 and above. So I guess they didn't like 6-year-olds coming out there playing. But that's how I ended up learning sports, because it was like the school of hard knocks. If you wanted to go out there and be younger than everybody else, you better get tough, and you better learn how to play. And I know that when we were playing this Sandlot football game against kids from another neighborhood, and I was the littlest kid out there, and the field we played on was slanted sideways. So if you, depending on which way you were going, you could run a sweep downhill around the end, or you might have to go uphill because it was slanted side to side, not end to end, but side to side. So you had a slanted field. But one kid went running. He was a big kid. And I jumped up and grabbed him around the neck and rode him right into the weeds. That was, the weeds were out of bounds.
That's a good natural barrier.
I rode him into the weeds, right into the ground on top of him. I grabbed him around the neck, rode down. It smashed his nose into the ground. And the kid gets up and his nose is bleeding and everything. And I'm like 7, and this kid is like 13. Oh, I thought he was going to beat me up, but he's crying and everything with the bloody nose. And the other ones are like, man, that's not fair. You killed him. And the guys on my team are like, he's the littlest kid out here. You're going to complain about him? So I just stood back and hid behind our bigger guys and hoped they'd stick up for me.
Yeah. I can't believe I smashed that guy. That was here in Huntington?
Yeah.
Where was that field?
That was up over in my old neighborhood up on Forest Road.
Oh, okay. So kind of
there's a house there now. They built a house on that field now. That's, no, old man Gillette used to run us off all the time. We'd get out there playing. He'd come out and run us off. You always had some old man that would run you off or some old lady that would keep your balls. Don't you hate it when old ladies keep your balls?
It's horrible.
I know. The ball, Mrs. Baines lived across the street from the field. And if the ball bounced in her yard, she grabbed it. We always imagined she had a whole basement full of balls down there.
This is mine now. This is mine.
That's right. And she'd take it in there, and we'd like, lady, give us our balls back. But she kept them.
There was one yard where we played wiffle ball, and it was kind of the same thing. But there was,
you grow up, and your wife keeps them.
It's something you got to learn at a younger age. Learn at a young age. Women will take your balls.
I'm sorry. Tell your wiffle ball story.
I kind of forgot what I was about to say. Oh, yeah, there was a yard... kind of the same thing, but the guy didn't have a fence, so he just walked in and grabbed it. He was, you know, he wasn't going to beat us to get the ball, so.
Well, he would come out and grab it if it rolled in his yard. He didn't even have a fence.
Yeah, yeah. Huh. Well, there was a little like small retaining wall that was on one side, and that was, you know, that was like our big green monster, and it was.
There's something wrong with people like that. Kids are supposed to be out and having fun.
Yeah.
Why would you go out and do that? You know.
Stay off my grass,
man. Don't you hate people? It grinds my gears, yeah. People like that.
It's like, you know, these kids want to come out and they want to...
Like the Sandlot.
They want to come out and they want to collect Pokemon on your yard. You should just let them because they just want to be kids.
No, well, that's different. They don't need to come in your yard to collect Pokemon. You know, I went out. Different? I was at work the other day and I went out to get in my car and one of my employees is wandering up and down the sidewalk. It's Gibby.
I know. I knew it had to be Gibby.
He's wandering up and down the sidewalk. And I said, did you lose your keys, Gibby? He said, no. I said, what are you doing? He said, I'm catching Pokemon. There's some kind of something that is out around here. I don't know, one of those creatures. And so he's catching Pokemans. I'm like, are you on a break or what? Well, you know, I guess it was up a couple minutes ago. I said, get your ass back in there and go to work.
Yeah, Gibby's got some good Pokemon.
Well, no wonder he's taking work time to go out and catch them.
Yeah, for whatever reason, just down the street from Tridata, there's like a... some sort of hot spot where it generates good Pokemon.
Probably Sheets.
No, it's the other direction. Sheets, you can battle at Sheets, but it's just down the other way.
I don't battle at Sheets. I just get my energy drinks and nuts there.
So women take your balls. Sheets gives you nuts.
That's right. And Red Bull gives you wings.
Red Bull gives you wings. Perfect.
Hey, you think we can get some money out of that? That's like a sponsorship right there, isn't it?
Maybe.
Anybody from Red Bull listening, there you go.
Yeah, Sheets, send us some free nuts.
Well, we're cutting in on Justin and Dwight's things I found at Sheets.
Oh, yeah, well.
We don't want to do that.
The market's not so big here in Huntington. You bump into other podcast sponsors here. tight competition.
We don't have that much to draw from.
It's true. We have Sheets. We have Marshall.
And we have Pokemans.
Well, the antitrust, though, there's a lot of... You see this pop up in the news pretty frequently about different mergers that want to go through, and the Department of Justice doesn't want to let them have them because of a fear of antitrust and monopoly violations.
So they have to rule on any merger has to go before the Department of Justice?
They do at a certain point, and I don't know what that point is. I know that, like, you know, for example, say if I had some sort of microfilm or data storage company called Mike Data, and we wanted to merge Mike Data with Tri-Data, I don't think we'd have to go in front of the Department of Justice.
Wouldn't be
for
big
that.
Enough. It probably has to be publicly traded or something.
Yeah, you might be right. That might be the qualifier, a publicly traded company.
We're not publicly traded.
No. Just the Pokemon at your facility are publicly traded.
They're publicly captured.
Publicly captured. So these larger companies, especially the ones that tend to have kind of the market share of all the different industry at a certain thing, that one that I always think of when it comes to mind is the telephone companies, Ma Bell, which you always hear about, where they had the different... different telephone companies had their own little sections and they all merged into one.
How'd you like to be the landline owner that sunk a bunch of money into buying up all the other landlines now?
That'd be a tough business.
That's about like the newspaper business, huh? That we talked about last week we mentioned that?
So I did my Egon impersonation.
Yeah.
Print is dead.
There's still, though, there's no stopping mergers. I was looking, and here's a list of mergers that are in the process. They're not a done deal because they have to be okay.
Right.
This is just for October.
Oh, really?
This is just for October. Mergers that have come before the Department of Justice. AT&T with Time Warner.
Right. That was the big one that was in the paper I just recently read about.
$85.4 billion.
Wow.
British American Tobacco and Reynolds American. RJ Reynolds. Mm-hmm. $47 billion. Qualcomm. I've heard of them. I've never heard of this other one. NXP Semiconductors, $37.9 billion. CenturyLink, that's a security thing, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
With Level 3 Communications, $25 billion. GE with Baker Hughes, $7.4 billion. Rockwell Collins with BE Aerospace, $6.4 billion.
GE with Baker Hughes?
Yeah. Here's one that surprised me. Bass Pro Shops with Cabela's.
Yeah, that one was crazy. I saw that.
They're Bass Pro Shops buying out Cabela's. I thought Cabela's was the biggest one in that niche of any of them. Yeah, $5.5 billion they're buying them.
Bass Pro Shops has gone huge.
It must be. Then TD Ameritrade.
Oh, yeah.
With Scott Trade.
Well, that makes sense.
$4 billion. Now, that's just October. And those have all got to be approved because, like you say, what? Antitrust implications and monopolistic implication. They have to see if it's in the best interest of the public. Is that what their ruling is?
Yeah, and they want to make sure that there's not going to be a situation where they're going to control too much of a market share of a certain sector of industry. It could be really bad.
We had a big fight with that going on right here.
Oh, yeah, with the hospitals, right?
Yeah, Cabell Huntington and St. Mary's. They wanted to merge, and you had some of the businesses here that were against that because... The hospitals took the stance that when they merge services, they'll be able to provide better service. They merge two hospitals, they'll be able to provide better service at lower cost. Whereas the businesses said, oh, they get together. They're the biggest game in town. They'll be able to raise the prices and nobody will have anywhere else to go. You have to go out of state to get services anywhere.
Yeah. So a little background about that. That's the one hospital is kind of in the east end of town and it's called St. Mary's. And it's grown. When I moved home, I couldn't believe how much it's kind of expanded its campus. Mm-hmm. And then also in the more towards the west end or central kind of Huntington, Cabell Huntington. Mm-hmm. And it's grown too. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they're both just massive hospitals.
And you say they're in other ends of town, but you're talking about they're no more than 5 miles apart.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, that's one thing about Huntington. It's not like it's super, super far.
Right. But, you know, you got the hospital saying, hey, this is for the good of the patients. I don't know. You know, everything, you got to know, if two businesses are getting together, the bottom line is what they see. There's going to be a loss of jobs. You know, they got to. There's going to be duplication of at least administrative positions. Yeah. Once you put them together, you can do that. So there's got to be a loss of jobs. If they do provide better service, that's great.
Well, I mean, maybe
but we don't know.
Maybe the loss of job would only be kind of more the executive level, which maybe that might be better. You cut out some of those bigger, higher-paying jobs.
I don't have any problem with that other than that this area doesn't need to lose any more jobs for any reason.
That's true.
But if it makes costs lower, that'd be fine. But I haven't seen anything in the healthcare industry whether it's the healthcare providers or the insurance or Obamacare or anything else that's making it any cheaper. You got Obamacare that's got premiums going up 25% and stuff like that this year. So, you know, the whole industry is in a mess. So I don't know what I believe there. Somebody needs to look out for us poor people that don't know what's best for us.
It's like we need a government to look out for us.
We need an adult. I need an adult. Just like Chris on Family Guy.
Is he Peter to come in?
Yeah, somebody came up and started asking him something. He started yelling, I need an adult.
Is that when the old creepy dude comes in?
Probably.
Get over here with your muscly arms. That kind of concerns me. I do a pretty good accent or a pretty good voice for the
old, for the old pervert.
The old pervert.
Yeah.
Get over here.
With that beard, you're kind of looking like an old pervert.
Get over here, muscly arms. Thanks. Now I'm going to shave it. Yeah, the mergers, I mean, that's something, I guess, if that's just for October, I mean, I know they're a constant source of things that happen in government. And I know there's a whole industry, a legal industry that deals with these mergers as well. Mergers and acquisitions, or M&A, as they say in the biz, is kind of a big legal field as well.
And sometimes the ones that get passed, even though they get passed, they're not good mergers. I have a list of a couple that were not very good ones. Daimler-Benz and Chrysler. In 1998, Mercedes-Benz merged with U.S. automaker Chrysler to create Daimler-Chrysler for $37 billion. That was in 1998. By 2007, Daimler-Benz sold Chrysler to the Cerberus, or I don't know how you say it, capital management firm, for $7 billion, $30 billion less. Just 8 years later, 9 years later. Yahoo and Facebook. Sometimes a bad merger can be avoided when one company chooses to stick it out. Yahoo saw the blossoming Facebook as a youngster with a promising future in 2006. So Yahoo made an offer to acquire the company for $1 billion. But Facebook gave a hard no. CEO, my nemesis, Mark Zuckerberg, was just about to launch Facebook's news feed and anticipated the company would be worth much more. And today it's worth about $38 billion. So that was a good one that he avoided there.
That's one thing I always wonder with a Facebook, like as far as how's that going to be monetized? You know, it's something that's in everybody's life. But
I don't understand any of that, how that stuff works. I mean, there's so much of that. I mean, if it's a free app and people are on it, how do you make money off of it? Now, I know those ads have something to do with it because you get those ads that pop up all over the place and those feeds and stuff like that. So that's got something to do with it. But how you would go about doing that, got to be somebody much smarter than me. Of course, that doesn't eliminate many.
Oh, come on now. Well, don't sell yourself short.
I made it this far, right, without falling in a manhole or something.
How was your day? Fell off the jetway again. Can you name that movie?
Was that the Jetsons?
No. Dumb and Dumber.
Oh.
He's like, hey, Lloyd, how was your day? Fell off the jetway again.
You shouldn't have thrown that movie out. People might start calling us that.
Oh, well, I'm going to have to edit that out now.
Yeah, that's right. You always do, don't you?
Always.
Good.
Usually. Well, I mean, I think the bottom line is that the mergers, I think it's kind of good sometimes to have the Department of Justice out there looking over some of these things to make sure that businesses don't get too big and there's not too much of a consolidation of power in certain industrial sectors, because I think it could actually be pretty bad.
You know what that really worries me? Mergers that involve beer.
Oh, no.
Because, I mean, I take my beer seriously. And we got to start having people that merger on beer. There's no telling what might happen. Do you know what the largest U.S. brewery is these days?
Is it InBev?
No. That's InBev is Anheuser-Busch.
Okay.
Budweiser. And they're, I think, German-owned?
Yeah, they're owned by somebody out of the country.
Right.
No, who is?
So, and who's the next one that you think of?
Miller Lite or...
Right, Miller.
Yeah.
Yeah. Miller and Coors actually merged.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah. And they're owned by some other country.
Well, I mean, if Miller starts using the cool waters from the Rocky Mountains for their beer, they could only be for the good of us all, right?
No, you can't do that.
You can't do that?
No, you can't change your recipe. And then number three, you've named the top two. Anheuser-Busch is number one, but they're not American. Miller Coors is number two, but they're not American. Mm. Number three.
Yingling?
No. You won't believe this. My redneck, white socks, and blue ribbon beer. Pabst Blue Ribbon.
PBR?
PBR is number three. However, they're owned by the Russians.
PBR is owned by Russians.
Yeah. Can you believe that? We're drinking Rusky beer.
I can't even believe that.
Well, I don't drink it. I wouldn't drink that stuff.
I like PBR.
Well, it's a Russian beer.
How about
you're collaborating
that?
With Putin, you and Trump.
How about
over
that?
There? You probably go over there with Trump and drink PBRs with Putin.
Well, I am sitting here with my shirt off.
And your redneck.
riding around on a horse with my shirt off.
Can you believe that?
I didn't. I had no idea PBR was owned by the Russians.
The fourth largest is Yingling. Hmm. So that's the number one. It's a U.S. company. That's the number one brewer of beer in the U.S. And do you know what their market share is?
Oh, it's got to be tiny.
1.4%.
Wow.
And they're the largest American brewery. Now, I thought it was interesting, though. Yingling recently, well, last few years, made a change to their recipe so that they fell in the craft brew category. And they are the largest craft brew beer in America. Now, what's happening, though, and this is where I talk about my beer getting messed up. What's happening is a lot of these large companies, they're seeing their market share shrinking. The Millers, the Budweisers, the Coors, all their market share is shrinking. So they're buying craft beer companies.
I've heard this.
Yeah. And I mean, to me, they're probably going to screw with it because they want to streamline it and they're not going to sell the original product. So a lot of these craft brewers are selling out. I don't want them to sell out. I want them to be craft brewers. I don't care if I have to pay a little bit more. I'd rather get the better beer. I don't want to drink slightly beer-flavored water anymore.
I agree with you. And this whole larger corporate thing for craft beers, that could be like horrible. You think about it, you have this kind of cool, hip, small craft brewery, and they make their own beer. They do things a certain way. And then all of a sudden, this big conglomerate comes in and says, oh, you need to have a break room that has a table that's 4 feet wide to fit with all of our policies and, you know, all these,
yeah,
these weird things. It's going to totally destroy that.
Well,
that
I'm
small
even
craft
more
brewery.
Worried that they'll change the way they make them and everything. I mean, I don't like every craft beer that comes along, but I like having the choice and trying them all. There's a lot of times we go over, there's a beer place across the river in Ohio, and they get all kinds of different kinds. We'll go in and just pick out a bunch of different ones, a bottle of this and a bottle of that, different things we've never tried, just so we can try them and see what we like.
Yeah, I agree. Exploration of them is pretty fun.
They said that Heineken has gone in and bought out a small craft brew company called Ballast Point that was actually the number 11.
Oh, yeah.
The number 11 craft beer company in the U.S.
Ballast Point, they make the Sculpin. Have you ever had that?
Mm-mm.
Oh, it's really good.
Constellation Brands, I don't know what they're evidently tied to something bigger, but they bought out Breckenridge Brewery, which was the number 47 craft brew, and they also bought out Four Peaks Brewing, which was the number 49th.
312 got bought out by Budweiser, I think, or something like that. The Chicago brewery.
Oh, it says that was a branch of AB, so they're bought out by Budweiser.
Yeah, yeah.
That's one thing that worries me. Who is our judge that is going to stand up and say, look, I don't care if it's a monopoly, and I don't care if there's antitrust implications. I got to stand up for the drinker's beer taste.
Yeah.
I've got to preserve this beer for the people that I know are out there. There are Tommy Smurls out there in the world that are counting on me to defend their beer. This merger must not go through. We need this craft beer company.
So you need to be like a Department of Justice beer merger specialist.
I'll be the taster.
Does it have to be a taster, you think? Do you need a taster?
If it's my job, I want it to be the taster.
Or is it more about like kind of crunching numbers and things like that?
No, I want to be the taster.
You want to crunch?
Know it when I drink it. That will be my motto. I'll know it when I drink it.
You want to crunch hops and barley. You want to crunch numbers.
I want to, as Charlie calls them, I want to remove the beer lids and drink them.
That's what Charlie says?
Yeah. The other night I was babysitting for her, and she was walking around the edge.
Charlie is Tommy's granddaughter.
Yes, in case you didn't know. And she's two. And she was walking around the ottoman. I was over at her parents' house watching her, and she says, "Oh, Pop, there's a coin down here." And I said, "There is." And she picked it up and she looked at it, and it was a bottle cap. And she looked at it, she said, "Oh, it not a coin, it a beer lid."
A beer lid.
She correctly identified a beer lid.
It's pretty funny.
That's not child abuse, is it?
No.
Okay, good. No.
It's education.
Education. That's right.
Well, I guess I got to tell you, I think you would be a fine candidate to be a beer taster.
Can I run for that?
Well, maybe we need to make a position for you.
They need to have that. They need to have the National Beer Taster, the protector of craft beers, and I will pledge myself to perform this duty, sacrifice, as it were, for the good of this country. Because that's just the kind of American I am.
I don't know, though. You don't like IPAs that much.
Well, I could make an exception.
You'd be willing to make an exception for this.
Yeah. I could still judge as to whether it's getting screwed up by a big brewery or not. I would have to swear an allegiance of non-discriminatory actions towards IPAs.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want to be racist against certain beers.
No. The one I really like that I brought back from Wyoming that I'm sitting actually here drinking today was the Pacos IPA. That's the one that I think it won from the Snake River Brewing. It won like the Great American Beer Fest is like the best IPA. Only available in Wyoming.
Hmm.
So it has not been merged and distributed widely. So it's pretty good.
Widely or wildly?
Either way.
That's right.
So. The other one I really kind of like too is similar to that too is New Glarus. It's out of Wisconsin. And you can't buy it outside of Wisconsin either.
Well, I tell you what I'm disappointed about. They have a Kentucky bourbon ale that's right just 2.5 hours away in Lexington, Kentucky.
Yeah.
We can't buy it here. Now, we can drive across the river over in Ohio, and they have it, but we can't buy it here. And they brew their beer and then age it in used bourbon barrels.
Is it not available here because of the alcohol content?
No, because they passed the craft beer bill here, so you can do that now.
Okay.
They just don't distribute it in this area. They just have a very specific area. Like you say, that the other one's only in Wyoming. Mm-hmm. This one's just in a very specific area, and they don't come across the river into West Virginia from Ohio.
So it's a Kentucky brewery. Mm-hmm. They'll sell in Ohio, but they won't sell in West Virginia.
Right.
Now that grinds my gears.
I know. And that's good stuff. I mean, it is smooth.
I mean, I've had it. I'm not... It's too bourbon-y for me.
Really?
I like my bourbon to taste like bourbon, my beer to taste like beer.
Well, it's almost like you don't taste the bourbon, you smell it.
Mm-hmm.
And the beer is good. It's very smooth. It's very smooth. I'm not much on drinking alcohol. So, I mean, as far as, you know, what am I trying to say? Liquors.
The hard stuff.
Or whatever. Yeah, I stick to beer, but I don't mind that.
I don't mind four fingers of bourbon every now and then. Four fingers sounds like a lot.
Four fingers of bourbon and two fingers of tequila.
Makes Mike a happy boy.
That's a tequila, isn't it? Two fingers?
Two fingers?
Yeah, I think it is.
Is that the name of one of them?
Yeah.
Two finger tequila?
Yeah.
That's
I guess the guy lost the other three. I don't know.
Interesting name. Oh, we're gonna start a debate. Is a thumb a finger?
It's a digit.
It's a digit.
I don't know. A thumb's a thumb. It's what separates us from the animals.
That's right. It's what's going to allow me to open the door to the recording studio here and walk out.
And open a beer.
There
you go.
Although I think I could probably open a beer without a thumb if I had to.
I've seen people use their teeth. Taylor does that. And I say, please, Taylor, don't do that. We paid too much for your braces.
Yeah, I don't do that. And I can't do it with the ring either. I've seen people open it just like with a ring. I've seen people open with their forearms. I can't do it.
Just use an opener.
Yeah.
Put one on your keychain, and now, then you're ready for any occasion.
I can do the whole Donovan's Reef thing where you set it on the edge of a table or a piece of wood, and you pop down on it.
Two things wrong with that. One is you're going to damage the table. Two, you'll probably spill your beer.
I don't know. A little bit of foam never hurt anybody.
You lose that part.
No, because everybody likes a little head.
Don't say something like that around me.
I'm talking about beer.
That reminds me of that joke about the guy that found the genie.
Oh, no. What's the joke about the guy that found the genie, Tommy?
Let's just say that he ended up with a little tiny head on his shoulders. So you can guess what he asked for.
Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode on baseball.
Yeah, you're going to have to edit a lot on this one.
Is it on baseball?
Baseball being very good to me.
This episode of baseball been very, very good to us. So that's going to bring us to...
Legal briefs. I forgot all about that. I was getting ready to wrap it up.
Yeah, you're going to skip legal briefs?
I thought we were already done.
No, we got to do legal briefs. That's the legal briefs is the section where we talk about different terms from this episode or maybe an older episode that we kind of touch back on.
And, no, we don't do that.
Oh, maybe we do, maybe we don't. I don't know.
Crap.
So the first term is the Sherman Antitrust Act.
The Sherman Antitrust Act has to do with acquisitions and mergers and whether it creates an unfair advantage.
That's true. And it was passed by Congress in 1890.
Yeah, by Sherman, the guy that Sherman it was with Peabody.
Sherman and Peabody?
They came back in the Wayback Machine and passed that.
That's right. Was Sherman the dog or Sherman the guy?
Sherman was the guy. Peabody was the dog.
The dog was the smart one, right?
Yes, the dog was smart. Sherman was pretty smart too.
He was.
But the dog was the adult.
He was the brains behind the whole.
Yeah,
the whole thing. The next term, monopoly.
Monopoly. Well, it's a game that you play.
This is true.
Where you pick pieces and then you pass, go and collect 200 and buy properties and try to bankrupt everybody else.
That's right.
It's also having a complete controlling interest as a business where you don't have to be competitive with anybody.
Exactly. The last term, and this kind of harkens back to something we talked about in a previous episode, is interstate commerce.
Interstate commerce. That's commerce that takes place between states that has to be not interfered with by a merger or affected by a merger or something.
Yes. And it's also one of the reasons that government can regulate things because the federal government has certain parameters. They can't just regulate things that happen in the states. They have to have reasons why they can do it. And if it touches on interstate commerce, that's one of the ways they're allowed to do that. Anything that touches on interstate commerce is deemed to be a federal issue.
So if it's a merger within one state that only operates within a state, would the federal government stay out of it?
That's a good question. They might. That would be something that would have to be looked at on probably a case-by-case basis.
Okay. Well, I'll keep that in mind in case I have any big mergers within this state that I'm thinking of. You just never know.
Well, if we think about it, we actually talked about one today. We talked about the St. Mary's Cavalry.
And it did just go under the state.
Right. But that was a state one. It was not a Department of Justice one. So
that's right. The Attorney General made the determination.
Exactly. So
we answered our own question.
We did. We just talked our way through that one.
We just figured that out.
So since that is not touch on interstate commerce, and it was referred to probably the West Virginia Attorney General.
Well, I don't feel so dumb after all.
You know what? Even a blind squirrel finds a nut. And every now and then.
It's a blind hog finds an acre now and then.
That one works too.
All right.
Thanks to everybody for listening. And thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well then, not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out, though, right?
Usually. Good. This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf. And I'm just a dude.
Thanks for listening.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.